Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Ida Rodriguez and Brett Ehrlich join us.
Yes.
I'm super this excited.
This is our second show together this week, right?
Yeah.
Really?
We did so Pop Trigger.
Oh, nice.
Great. We had a great time on Pop Trigger.
Oh, yeah.
I think everyone should check it out.
Yeah, I do too.
How can they check it out?
YouTube.com/Pop Trigger.
Nice.
It's short for popular
trigger. It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was good.
We got to channel a lot of our anger and direct it at the right people.
But like frequently when people are done doing the show, we just don't talk about them. But then Grace and Sam wanted to talk about you after, like in a really good way. They're like,
nice.
That was a really good show.
Yeah, Ida's awesome.
So there you go.
I love it. I love strong women on the show. All right, just a few TYT lives before we get to the stories. Julia Mahoney says, if you're a politician who thinks that your career and salary aren't reliant on the people, how can we expect you to serve the people? Great point. And also Jackie McCaffrey says, Bernie won Oklahoma in the primary. Yeah.
The Democratic primary.
Yeah, the Democratic, obviously, yeah. That's a good point. Man, Bernie, he did a lot of great things.
Yeah.
I mean, he went way further than the vast majority of Americans expected him to go, you know?
Yeah.
Which,
yep.
And had been doing a lot of good things for a long time. Like when I see his old civil rights pictures.
I know.
Before anybody was like, Bernie, he's lived a life of creating a legacy that, you know, of things that matter. And I respect him a lot for that.
Yeah. I mean, you can see that he's a man of the people. And I think that's what resonates with so many. By the way, so many Republicans as well. There were people on the right that you know, took a liking to him. And so, I mean, every time I hear him speak, you think about what we could have had. It's kind of depressing, but whatever.
You've convinced me. I'm going to go look up whoever this person you're talking about is. Find out who it was.
Yeah. All right, let's get to some fun stories. I love this hour. Brett says he loves this hour, which meant a lot to me because I've been going out of my way to ensure that the second hour has some fun in it.
Yeah.
And there's definitely one, more than one, but one definite fun story that I can't wait to get to. So let's do it. All right. Health inspectors have found numerous violations at the Mar-a-Lago resort. This is the place where new members can essentially shell out $200,000 to be members, and then they have to pay additional money just to eat at this fancy restaurant that has big, beautiful chocolate cakes. Now, the inspectors recently found 13 violations at the Fancy Club's kitchen, a record for an institution that charges $200,000 in initiation fees. Now, three of the violations were deemed high priority, meaning that they could allow the presence of illness-causing bacteria on plates served in the dining room. Now, they did these checks into the kitchen in January 26th to be specific, and here's what they found. Fish designed to be served raw or uncooked had not undergone proper parasite destruction. Kitchen staffers were ordered to cook the fish immediately or throw it out. Also, in two of the club's coolers, inspectors found that raw meats that should be stored at 41 degrees were much too warm and potentially dangerous. So chicken was at 49 degrees, duck 50 degrees, and raw beef 50 degrees. Ham was at 57 degrees. Also, the other violations weren't so serious. The water at the sink where employees wash their hands was too cold to sanitize. And also, it's interesting to keep in mind that in the past, Mar-a-Lago didn't have a lot of problems with these violations because Donald Trump himself, to give him credit, was very much involved in what was going on. Like, he would go in the kitchen, he would tell them what they needed to do. He was acting as a pretty effective boss in that scenario. But now, since he's very much involved in politics, he's not able to be as involved with the kitchen. So last year, there were 11 of these violations last year compared to just two in 2015. So you can see a steep incline in the number of violations as soon as he got involved with the campaign.
I just want to see an episode of Kitchen Nightmares where like Gordon Ramsay's like, this is raw food.
Well,
it's too warm, your hands at 57 degrees.
Look, everything's kind of turning into a reality show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've already seen reality TV and the White House merge. So why wouldn't Gordon Ramsay get involved with this situation?
Go back to your old job, Donald.
Yes, exactly.
You are good at that. I feel like maybe his employees are trying to poison him. Because you know whoever's cooking in that kitchen is not treated well. They can't even get warm water to wash their hands. So they're probably trying to to poison old Donald boy.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on, but it is pretty crazy to think that, you know, people could get sick. Look, I think that sometimes health code violations go too far, right? Mm-hmm. I've worked in the food service industry, and sometimes there are things that you're forced to do that just seem very nitpicky. So when I see, oh, this place has 13 violations, I know that, you know, a handful of them might be a little serious, and then the majority of them are, you know, just going overboard. But that's just my opinion, man. I'm not an expert, so.
It's all part of the revolution. I think everybody's doing whatever they can in whatever capacity they can to fight and rebel against this administration. So even those health code people are probably like, what can we find here?
It's just, I like this part of the report that says, don't worry, at least Mar-a-Lago met the minimum standards for the health code. And that's really a good goal to have in mind.
Minimum standards.
Just like Donald Trump, make America meet minimum standards again. Like that's his new slogan. And if we could do that.
I mean, I wish he met the minimum standards to be president. But apparently when it comes to the White House, we don't really have strict regulations regarding minimum standards.
When I see all the meetings that he has with heads of state, the whole reason that we designed Washington, D.C. to look the way it does is to make it give you like the ultimate home court advantage. Mm-hmm. And what does Donald Trump do instead of like showing off this beautiful campus that looks like, you know, ancient Greek architecture? It's so impressive. He takes them where? Florida. It's like, what are you doing? Like, I know people from Florida. They're like, don't take
I'm
people
from
to
Florida.
The home. Yeah, my fiance is from Florida, and her favorite Twitter handle is Florida Man.
Oh, that's the funniest Twitter handle.
It's out of control.
Florida is a fascinating place. I'm just going to leave it there.
No offense to Florida, but it sucks.
It's like three states going on at once. But I read this article today that said, what is Donald Trump going to do with Kellyanne Conway? Mm-hmm. How about you send her to the kitchen?
But I totally agree with you.
Practice what you preach as a conservative, right?
I totally agree with you, though, about just taking Donald being like, listen, we have a very important job for you to do. Could you please put down your mother of all weapons for a second? There's a way higher priority thing. There's biological warfare going on. It's called E. coli, and it's in the kitchen. Go fix it.
Yeah.
And let him, you know, arrange those deck chairs.
And I'd be pissed. If I'm spending $200,000 a year to be part of this club and the food is subpar, like that's one of the things they pride themselves in, I'd be pissed. Where's the outrage? Where is the outrage, you Mar-a-Lago consumers?
It reminded me of people tweeting out photos of like the food at the Trump Tower restaurant and how bad it was. I don't know. The other thing is like, $200,000 initiation fee. It's like, do you want, people say, let's get Donald Trump, he's a businessman, so we'll run the government like a business. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is an aspect of a business, is to see how much you can charge people for stuff.
Right, well, here's the thing. I would venture to say that some of the people who are paying this increased initiation price aren't necessarily doing it because they're, you know, looking forward to the fancy pokey dish at the restaurant. I mean, Donald Trump continuously advertises the fact that he is going to his winter White House or he's going to Mar-a-Lago every weekend, and people want that access. Yeah. These are the wealthiest individuals in the country who can afford to pay this type of fee, and they know that being able to, you know, be in close proximity to Trump or being able to say, Trump, hey, what's up? You know, I'm paying that fee. You're more likely to be represented and heard by the president. Yeah. I think it has more to do with that as opposed to the resort itself.
At least make it like not as obvious as like a literal exclusive club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a lot of people say, like, you know, it's actually an exclusive club. Like you look at it, it's like the athletic facilities in Congress. It's like this exclusive club. It's like, no, actually, this is a country club where people pay $200,000 to have access.
He takes the notion of smoke-filled rooms and kind of flips it on its head. You know, I mean, you gotta, I guess, maybe applaud how transparent it is, but I don't think he's attempting to be transparent. I just think that he lacks the sophistication necessary to be a little more secretive about the fact that you are corrupt.
I think the reason he isn't doing proper parasite destruction is because he's afraid that he's a parasite.
I don't want to go.
We should raise $1 million and send a Muslim, a Mexican, a gay person. Like we need to assemble a group of all of the undesirables to these people and get them a membership to this club.
That's a great I bet there's like a voting process.
I want like $5 million so we can flood a bunch of people in there. You know what I mean? Not just one representative of each disenfranchised group.
That's why I like this story. Like, I know all these things are not very practical solutions, but they really feel good.
They feel good. It feels good just to talk about it. So, no, it's awesome.
Okay.
All right, moving on to some other news. During International Women's Day, there was an awesome statue unveiled in New York, Wall Street to be specific. It was the Fearless Girl, a 4-foot statue featuring a young girl who's basically standing up to the bull. And I love this because it's a representation of how there needs to be, more gender equality in corporate jobs. And it went along with the theme for International Women's Day. Now, here's an unexpected twist to the story. The person who sculpted the bull is really upset about this because he feels like the Fearless Girl has completely flipped the meaning of the bull from a positive thing to a negative one. Now, let me give you the details. Since March 7th, Charging Bull has faced off against Fearless Girl, a statue of a girl posed with her fists on her hips that was commissioned by State Street Global Advisors, a financial firm based in Boston. Now, the person, the artist who created the bull, his name is Arturo Di Modica, is not happy about this. Di Modica said that Fearless Girl was an insult to his work, which he created after the stock market crashes in the late 1980s. She's there attacking the bull, he said.
Is she? That famous attack move called standing there.
That's it. Do you don't? I'm speechless sometimes, but instead of saying, you know what, this is brave. The young girl is facing off with the bull. We salute that. We celebrate it. It's all of a sudden, which is always what we deal with as being empowered women and being strong, that we can't just be strong without being a threat to manhood. It can't just be strong.
Or insulting manhood, right? But look, to be fair to him and, you know, what his lawyers say, he's not upset about the notion of gender equality. Mm-hmm. He says he's a proponent of that. He just doesn't like that this imagery changes the symbolism of the bull. But my argument to that would be, look, it's not the Fearless Girl who changed the symbolism. It's a corrupt political system. It's the fact that we didn't have a stock market crash in the 1980s. We did have we not only had a stock market crash in the 1980s, we continuously deal with this economic situation where the very people that you're defending in Wall Street have been taking advantage of us over and over again. You know, I look at that bull and I don't think, you know, here's what he believes the bull means: freedom in the world, peace, power, and love. I don't look at the bull and think of that. And that has nothing to do with the Fearless Girl. That has to do, I mean, and it's unfair to him. It has more to do with what we've allowed Wall Street to get away with.
Dude, it's the same sculpture. Your sculpture is the same sculpture as her. Yours was, let's be optimistic and powerful in the face of something that's daunting and scary. And that's exactly what her sculpture is all about. You had the stock market crash.
Yeah.
You built the bull. My favorite thing is, he recalls, he's an artist, I get it. Mm-hmm. Artists are emotional, and I see when someone like turns it on its head. But like, did you know what The Room is, the movie The Room?
Yes.
Movie The Room is the worst movie ever made.
I love The Room.
But you love it because?
Because it was a story of like someone who survived.
No. Okay, there's two movies called The Room.
Oh, okay.
There's a movie called The Room in Los Angeles. Yours is like an Oscar nominated thing.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's what I was talking about.
There's a movie called The Room that has a cult following in Los Angeles because it was made by like this really eccentric, maybe he's Romanian, but he might just be from like Brooklyn and pretend to be Romanian, guy who looks like a vampire. And like, it is the biggest train wreck of a movie.
It's the worst movie
like,
ever.
The green screen, it's like the movie, you know, the video goes by and the background doesn't change. And they recast actresses in the middle of it. And it was originally intended in a certain way. But people started to appreciate it more as the train wreck that it is. Yeah. But the guy who made it embraces that now and says, oh, that's a different way to look at my movie. And now he appears when they screen it in Los Angeles, the way they screen Rocky Horror Picture Show. And that's what this guy needs to do, Di Modica needs to do.
I love that. I love that. And you know what? I can't believe I didn't even think about this originally, but isn't art supposed to be something that's left for the viewer to interpret?
Yeah.
Or the consumer to interpret? So isn't it a little unfair for the artist to say, no, You have to love the bull and think of the bull in a positive light, okay? If you don't, you're insulting the bull.
You're right.
It's weird. It's weird to say, no, you have to interpret the art the way that I want you to interpret it. Doesn't that go against what art is?
Yeah, and it changes. It changes through time. Like, if you think about some of the art pieces that were not appreciated at one time and then later became these, you know, classic, iconic pieces of art, it changes with... This is a new generation. Yeah. You guys are a new generation of warriors and justice warriors. And the way you, the things that were perceived in the past sometimes that were okay with the status quo, that were oppressive, and you guys are not having it. We're not having it. So it's not going to have the same connotation. And even if you remove that girl,
right?
When you see that bull, you don't think about what he was thinking about, because this is a different time.
This is a different era. You're absolutely right. And look, for me, This story is not about, oh, we got to fight for gender equality. I mean, I believe in fighting for gender equality. I love what the Fearless Girl statue represents. But even if we took her out of the picture and we focus solely on what that bull means and how I interpret it, it might have meant something positive back then. But I look at it now, and when it's charging, I feel like it's charging at the American people.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And that has, I have nothing against the artist, and I feel for him, because no one wants their art to be looked at in a negative light. But at the same time, the times have changed. We are dealing with people who have had their lives destroyed because of economic meltdowns due to, you know, some of the bad behavior at Wall Street. So he's got to understand that perspective as well.
Look, it's like it's a sculpture garden now. It's like a Christmas tree, when the people go like, when it got our first Christmas tree, we bought one ornament, and then we bought one a year after that.
Yeah.
And before we knew it, we have this beautiful story of our lives. That's what this is, and this is amazing. This is really good art. This is better art with that bull charging at that girl than it would be if it was just that girl in the middle of the square. It would still be awesome on its own, but it's really awesome like this. My question to him is, like, how do you feel about, like, how people typically interact with your bull when they go visit Wall Street?
That's a good point.
Because there's, like, one really shiny part of your sculpture, and it's that bull's testicles, where everyone has, like, that cheeky video photo where they just go, I'm really doing it. The other thing he said is, he said he got really emotional when he first thought about it. And he said he wanted to go try to do something to end the face-off, because it made him feel uncomfortable, the face-off. And I think that's aside from anything about the transformation of his thing. That made him feel uncomfortable. And he said he wanted to go down and turn that bull around himself, which would be even worse, because then the bull's just like, look at my nuts, little girl.
or running from her.
Or running from her.
He lost. Like,
anyway.
We have to face our internal contradictions, and we have to face the realities. I think these two facing each other is really powerful.
Yeah, right. It'd be a chunk of history, like you said. I think it'd just be the evolution of that moment, of that what happened there, and now this little girl's been at it. I'm going to New York next week. I'm going to go take a picture there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to rub the bull's balls.
All right. I love that. All right, guys. Well, if you're in New York, this will be a good opportunity for you to go rub the bull's balls while we take a break. When we come back, we will share what I believe to be the best story of the day. It's fun, not political, but you don't want to miss it. The quotes are so good. Yep. Stick around. Welcome back to TYT. Anna, Brett, and Ida here with you. I want to do some member shout outs, because members are awesome. They keep our show independent. You support us and help us do what we do. Dale Simpson and Marty Torstall are the two members that get a shout out today. Thank you so much, guys. You have no idea how much we appreciate you. Also, a few TYT lives. Historic Larry says, come on, Shinzo, let's go eat some bad tuna. Oh my god.
I just love, come on, Shinzo. I don't know why I love that so much.
Laura P.S. says, I imagine the Donald has eaten a lot of spit in his life.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great point.
And Homer 2342 says, that artist is a special snowflake. The girl statue enhances his, since it's part of the artwork. And also, I read a tweet. I'm sorry I didn't write down the handle for the person who sent it to me, but she made a good point. Not all art is meant to be interpreted by the person seeing it. There's autobiographical art, of course. But that's not the case with this story.
Right. And listen, artists get upset all the time over how their stuff's going over. Then you need to take a step back and, you know, if someone whose life is putting stuff in front of people and seeing how they react, that guy needed to think about how folks might react before putting this statement in front of people.
Right. Right.
I do it every night as a comic, and sometimes I go home in my feelings thinking, wow, that's a great joke, but nobody got it but me.
Yeah,
that must be tough. You know, like just knowing in your heart that the joke you have is good and then you don't get the reaction you expect. It's kind of like when, I don't know if you ever experienced this.
Everyone laughs at everything I say.
No. I was going to say, once in a while you'll do a video or a story and you feel like you did a pretty good job covering it and you're like, yeah, people are going to notice. Crickets. And then you'll do one story on something you don't really care about that much and it blows up and goes viral.
Yeah. Internet videos are a great way to insulate yourself from instant reaction from people.
Well, I'll just have you know that no matter what Anna does, I was in Kansas City and her fans were harassing me at my comedy show. I made her do a shout out because no matter what she does, they love her.
I wouldn't say no matter what I do, but thank you. You guys are
awesome. Don't understand why they do that, but it happens.
It's weird.
He was really like.
All right, let's get to some fun. That's not fun. There was a headline that caught my attention today. It was written by the New York Post, so of course take it with a grain of salt, but it was a profile on some New Yorkers and their dating habits. It was titled, "Why I Won't Date Hot Women Anymore." So I was curious about it. I proceeded to read, and I'm glad that I did because some of the quotes in this article were insufferable. Okay, so let me give you some examples. It starts off with a 40-year-old gentleman by the name of Dan Roschkind. He is a successful guy and I would say of average looks. And the only reason why I say that is because it's actually relevant to the story.
Absolutely.
Now, let me tell you what he feels about himself and what he feels about who he's dated in the past and who he prefers to date now. He says, "I could have dated anyone." Now 40, an Upper West Sider with a muscular build and a full head of hair.
Yeah.
That's how he was described. "I met some nice people, but realistically, I went for the hottest girl you could find." Dan Roschkind used to date swimsuit models, but he's happier now that he's engaged to a merely beautiful woman, Carly Spindle. All right.
What is merely beautiful?
What?
What does that mean?
What? Yeah. Who says, you know what? This is a great article to be part of. I'm going to go ahead and throw my significant other the bus and make her think that she's not attractive enough, or at least not as attractive as the women I used to date. I'm going to settle for her because she's, you know, she's got a good personality.
And you got to look him up because he's mediocre at best.
I mean, look, I really hate commenting on people's looks.
Me too.
But it's just the way that he refers to himself. You would think that he's Adonis. It's the most absurd story. What I can't even believe this. Okay, anyway.
And I don't like that picture because that picture makes her look like a little crazy. But that's not the best picture for her because I know that she's fine.
She's beautiful. Yeah.
You know what
she
I'm saying?
She works out. You can see fine. The definition in the shoulder pectoral zone.
Yeah, she's fine. So they got this picture where she looks a little off. To support this,
whole narrative.
Michelle Bachmann on the cover of Newsweek,
yes.
Guys.
Let me be clear about something, okay? And I'm being genuine in what I'm saying, and I don't know, maybe you guys disagree with me. She's not the one who won in this scenario. You are the winner, okay?
Absolutely.
She's gorgeous, and anyway, let me continue. He says, "Beautiful women who get a fair amount of attention get full of themselves." Oh, because you're not. You're a very humble gentleman.
They should be so lucky as to have my attention.
I have a full head of hair.
Yeah. Run your hand through it. It'll get stuck for a second.
By the way, there are insufferable women later in this article as well. It's not just the men, okay? "Beautiful women who get a fair amount of attention get full of themselves. Eventually, I was dreading getting dinner with them because they couldn't carry a conversation." So this, you know, the stereotype that if you're an attractive woman, you're dumb.
Yeah.
And you can't carry a conversation. So, you know, he's God's gift to humanity. And he unfortunately had to suffer and settle for someone who's not as attractive as what he would have preferred. But at least she can carry a conversation. All right, here's what he says. I can't take it. I can't take it. I can't take
it.
Oh, it continues.
Like
it. It continues. Okay.
I like when you spiral though.
All right, no, it's just.
Yeah, we're losing Anna. Someone tie her down. Someone tie her down.
Look, if somebody's looking, she's doing this with her hair, somebody at home is like, she's so sexy.
No.
She's merely beautiful.
No, here's what he says. Here's what he says about his fiance. He's engaged to her. He says, she's a softer beauty, someone you can take home and cuddle with, and she's very elegant. She's 5'2", so she can't be a runway model.
What a dick!
But I think she's really beautiful and is prettier than anyone I've dated. So he kind of tries to save himself in the end. But still, what? Okay.
I do believe she's prettier than anyone he's ever dated. But I think that when I listened to him, when I listened to what he said or when I read what he said, I was like, obviously he doesn't know the laws of attraction. He's shallow, superficial. So of course he's going to attract those kind of people.
No, but he's grown up. He's grown up and he's decided, you know, cost benefit analysis, like, all right, I'll go for the less attractive in his eyes, the less attractive person.
Yeah.
I can't deal with this guy. Okay. So now let's go to Benedict Beckfield, a Brooklyn writer, and here's what he had to say. From my personal experience, people who are better looking are less likely to pursue advanced degrees or play an instrument or learn other languages, says Benedict Beckold, a 37-year-old Brooklyn writer with a doctorate in philosophy and the body of an Adonis.
He does.
But he's quick to note that he's not just a great set of abs. He also plays the violin and speaks 7 languages. Okay, so what are you talking about? If you're an attractive person and you have these talents, what makes you think that just because someone's attractive, they should immediately be stereotyped as someone who doesn't know another language or plays an instrument or has any talent? This is crazy.
All right. I wonder if he can say douchebag in all of those languages. Like, I speak 7 languages. It's douchebag, douchebag, I don't know.
Douchebago.
Bolsa de ducha.
Oh, yeah. All right. Now let's go to a woman, because as I mentioned, there were women in this article that were just as bad. So Megan Young is one of them. She says, as a person who's always been complimented on my stunning beauty, I'd been searching for a hot guy to match that label, and I'd always been given. But after a date or two, they'll have problems hanging out with you, and then we'll ghost. And so here's a picture of the guy that she's with now, and she just kind of talks about him like he's not good. He's super good looking.
Let's look at the picture of her. She looks like one of those moms from the shows where the daughters are dancers. The dance mom show.
You watch your step here. I love that show.
I think he's a hot guy.
He's a good, but they're both good looking, right?
Right.
But this notion that, look, the way that she's describing her relationship, she makes it sound like she's a supermodel and that he's like the most average looking guy. You guys are, you know, comparable attractiveness. Like, what's going on? Anyway, this is what she says about him. He's not a model, but he's so much more attractive in who he is as a person.
It makes up for his stupid face, his terrible, gross, ugly face.
So I'll share this story, and it's very, very, like, I feel very vulnerable when I tell it, because it's the truth. I went to Korea, and people kept staring at me, and I felt a little weird, right? So I asked one of the women that was with our tour, and I said, why do people keep staring at me? And she was like, can I be honest with you? Mm-hmm. And she said, because in Korea, you're considered ugly. She was like, you're tall and you're dark. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and to them, that's an atrocity. You know,
that's an atrocity.
Yeah, she was like, you're like King Kong or Godzilla. I wrote a joke about it. So I went to Israel last year, and the men would keep talking to me and saying, oh my God, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful. My point is, it's all relative, right? Like, it depends. The fact that you think you are a global beauty and that you are the standard of beauty is the reason why we have so many young women who have eating disorders that are trying to distort their faces, because that standard of beauty that keeps being pushed on people, and look how they're crazy. They're sick, not crazy, they're sick. That narcissism is an illness or a disorder. That is not normal. People don't walk around thinking stuff like this.
Yeah, we did a story on Pop Trigger about this. And there was a whole list of, like, the ideal country to country around the world. And it was so very different. I just think that aside from whether you can go back home to your wife at the end of this, your fiance or whatever, and she can like let you sleep in that bed tonight,
yes.
People in this article. Everything you're saying just sounds so complaining. Like you had this thing and you would rather blame anyone else in the world for your failings in the romantic arena except for you.
Yeah. And just, it's a good point.
You know, it's not me. It's because beautiful women are terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, no, just find someone who you think is hot, whatever that means, and just date them.
But attractive people in general, it's like based on whatever we consider attractive, we give them the label of not being intelligent, which is a lie. You watch this show daily. You see these attractive people and they're intelligent. They're well spoken.
Stop. You should see when I go to
Korea. No. But I'm being real here. Like we can just be honest about it. Like it's such a, you hear it in comedy all the time. Mm-hmm. Like the more attractive the comedians, the less likely they are to be funny because attractive people don't have struggles in life. They don't have problems.
So it's like, listen, it takes all kinds. I would say in basketball or any sport, like there's people who have more physical talent. Like in my 7 and 8 year old basketball league there's people who are just faster. But then there are the ones who are faster and work at it and people who are faster and don't. And I do believe that like if you're considered attractive, you have an opportunity to either just rest on that or
and some people do.
Or develop whatever other skills or personality that you want to do.
And look, I don't want anyone to think that like I'm this self-righteous person who never stereotypes because I stereotyped the hell out of my husband when I met him.
Yeah.
You know, he was a professional baseball player.
He's hot.
I asked him, he is hot. I asked him.
I follow him on Instagram.
I asked him, one of the first questions was, oh, are you interested in news and politics? He said, no. And I asked him, what are you interested in? He said, sports. I was like, oh, this guy's dumb. I immediately assumed he was dumb. And that was the most unfair stereotype that I could give him because he ended up being so incredibly smart, so incredibly charming and loving in our chemistry. I mean, if I had actually just followed that ridiculous stereotype I had in my head, I wouldn't have ended up with him and that would have been a shame, right? We all fall victim to that and just don't. Try not to do it. Try to course correct. Try to give that person an opportunity to prove themselves.
But don't you think that like if someone went through something like rough, and came out the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I do feel like if someone went through like a charmed life and a charmed existence and never was challenged by anything, I do think like, well, that person has the scars that give them character. Is that the same as being like, oh, all people who don't have any, never went through anything negative are by definition worse than the ones who went through hardship and came out on the other side? Like my girlfriend was in band. I feel like that was enough to make her a nerd and then battle through it to be a cool person.
I think everyone goes through challenges. I don't think anyone really has a charmed life, even if it appears to be a charmed life on the outside. Everyone has their own struggles. And I think social media kind of distorts what the reality is for a lot of people. Because the vast majority of people aren't going to share, their struggles online, they only share the things that they want to brag about.
Yeah.
You know, they're the things that they've succeeded in or, great things that are happening in their families, whatever it is. Like no one's talking about, oh, my parents are divorcing. Well, some people do and on social media and it's always really awkward.
Yeah.
Right? But most people don't. And I think that gives you a distorted reality.
And I feel like there's a room full of super hot women who are reading this article and go, yeah, all these rich douchebags don't even ask questions about my personality. I wanted to talk about my quantum physics degree.
Yeah.
But they didn't even think to ask because they're douchebags.
I agree with you too. And I'm really big on that, specifically someone that comes from a lower social economic place. It's a big deal for me that just because somebody's struggle doesn't look like yours doesn't mean it isn't as valid. Mm-hmm. Like I have friends that grew up rich and grew up in a house with people that were molesting them or were being neglected by their parents.
Drug abuse, alcohol abuse.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things that people cope with. And so, look, point of the story is don't stereotype and also just take a quick moment to reflect on yourself and think about your own flaws and what you can do to improve that if you're looking for a relationship. It's not about looking for someone who's less attractive. It's about looking for someone, that you can compromise with and have a partnership with. And that's what you really have in a relationship. It's supposed to be a partnership, not a vanity contest.
If you're trying to make a point that you don't want to be with a shallow person, that's shallow all unto itself. Yeah. So I don't get it.
Anyway, all right, let's move on to one of the most amazing
stories. That's my favorite story. Yeah.
Love it.
An eight-year-old Ohio boy had the munchies. Not from doing anything illegal, he just really, really wanted a burger from McDonald's. And so he decided to get behind the wheel and drive himself and his little sister to McDonald's to get a cheeseburger. It is amazing. Okay, so Officer Jacob Kohler told Fox 8 that the kids decided to leave after their mother had fallen asleep on the couch. Witnesses later saw the boy driving his father's work van, a van, and called the police. Now his dad showed up, he was exhausted, right? And so he goes to sleep first, then they wait for the mom to go to sleep, and then they make their way to McDonald's. Now here's the amazing part. The boy drove about a mile from his home with his little sister in the back of the van. He drove through four intersections and over railroad tracks. The boy obeyed all traffic laws and drove the speed limit. Okay, so lots of miraculous things here, okay? Not only did he operate the vehicle appropriately and follow all the laws necessary to do so, he also knew how to get to McDonald's.
Oh, that was the thing that got me the most.
Wow. Who knows at eight how to get around?
But how, I want my, mm-hmm. I mean, I was like, his feet reached the pedals.
Yeah,
like
that's also amazing.
How big are
eight-year-olds? I hope he doesn't go to South Korea. That's a reference to an older story, sorry.
Yeah. How? I mean, yeah, I can't imagine how he fit. How big are 8-year-olds?
I mean, this 8-year-old's amazing. So apparently he told the cop that he learned how to drive on YouTube, and YouTube can teach you anything. Yeah. Okay, I learned all sorts of, you know, technical stuff related to the news on YouTube, like how to do editing and all that. YouTube's amazing. Anyway, I do want to show you guys this local news report. At least a snippet of it is from WKBN. It's a local affiliate, and we will have the link to the full story below in the description box. But here's a snippet giving you some more context into the story.
The kid was ready for his prize and eager to take off that familiar yellow wrapper, which would uncover a cheeseburger.
And whenever he pulled up to the first window, the employees actually thought that they were being pranked.
The parents were not in the back of the van. They were at home. The vehicle was surrounded by adults in the McDonald's parking lot, and the boy was crying when Patrolman Kohler started talking to him, realizing he might be in trouble.
You know what I think is also amazing? Mm-hmm. That he put his sister in the back seat. She wasn't on the passenger side. He knew that she belonged. As a mom, like, I'm like, that kid is smart. But I just, you terrible drivers in California. An 8-year-old jumped in the van with his little sister, made it through a drive-through.
Yeah.
While you're trying to put your, obeyed all the rules. Please.
Isn't that amazing?
Go to YouTube.
By the way, I would be terrified if I were his parents. Oh, not only because of this one incident, but because he's so incredibly smart for an 8-year-old, he would outsmart me, you know? Yeah. So I don't know what kind of trouble he's gonna get
into. He's gonna fly a plane by the time he's 12.
It's like that, yeah, 12 years old. He's on the track. But it's like that movie with Chris Evans that's coming out, where he's just like, I stared at the ceiling for 3 hours as my child was doing, like, you know, calculus on the wall. That's, yeah. I mean, it's so amazing. Imagine if you worked at McDonald's, because it wouldn't be, like, if you pull through the drive-thru, you'd hear over the loudspeaker, like, a kid's voice, and you'd probably think, oh, mom's letting the kid order.
Yeah, how cute.
And then, like, imagine, like, you have your Happy Meal. And you turn to the window, and it's just like an 8-year-old kid, just like, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're like, is that a little person? Thank you. No, that's the kid.
And the kid is probably smart enough where they'd be like, are you a child? And the kid would go, how dare you, sir?
How far would you guys go to, you know, appease the munchies? Like you have a craving for something. How far would you be willing to go for it?
I would let an 8-year-old drive to McDonald's.
Same.
Especially that one. Mm-hmm. I'd just jump in the back seat and be like, you got it, Bobo, let's go.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my God. I remember I was going in college. Mm-hmm. I was the driver. I was sober, but no one else in the car was. And we went to Jack in the Box, and there's two entrances to Jack in the Box. Mm-hmm. And they were like, get in line now, someone's coming. So I backed in I went backwards because otherwise I'd have to make a U-turn and someone would get in front of us. So I backed into the drive-thru and went through it backwards. I was like,
oh my God.
And I did it. And I didn't get a ticket for it. They like were really angry with me though.
Yeah, that was a terrible idea.
Yeah, someone, the person from the other car.
Are you sure you weren't also under the influence of something when you
did that? No, because I wouldn't do that.
He was under that, the worst influence, peer pressure.
Terrified, terrified of laws, but also susceptible to peer pressure. And that's where those two came together.
Well, I just gotta say as a Floridian, because Florida and Ohio are always battling it out for the headlines.
Are they? I feel like Florida usually, you know,
Ohio just got another coin on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. They did, yeah. All
They're
right.
both places like you realizing like everyone has family in one of those two states. Like everyone either goes to Ohio for Thanksgiving or Florida. At least
and everyone knows a victim in Florida, Ohio.
All right. Moving on to going back to some serious news actually. Lawmakers in North Carolina have decided that it would be a great idea to waste resources in their state to draft legislation that would outlaw, ban same-sex marriage. Even though the Supreme Court has already ruled that banning same-sex marriage is unconstitutional, these lawmakers don't care. They still wish to move forward with this bill. Now, the three conservative Republican state legislators introduced a bill to ban people of the same sex from marrying one another in North Carolina, titled the Uphold Historical Marriage Act. The bill argues that the Supreme Court ruling exceeds the authority of the court relative to the decree of Almighty God, and that individual states should be allowed to make their own marriage laws. Individual states should not be allowed to make their own marriage laws because it is a civil rights issue, and civil rights issues are not left to the states. It is a federal issue, and the Supreme Court made a ruling, and you guys need to stop being such babies about it and move on with your lives. But they don't want to. Again, they want to waste resources on something this stupid.
Not that many resources. It's a one-page bill.
No, but here's the thing. It's a one-page bill, but you're wasting time, right?
Sure.
Like you should be representing your constituents. Right now, North Carolina is still trying to recover from that anti-LGBT legislation bill law passed into law last year, right? The transgender bathroom thing. They lost $100 million because
NBA All-Star Game, the NCAA playoff.
Yeah, stop being stupid, okay? Stop being stupid. So. Let me give you some more information on this. The bill goes on to quote Genesis, quote, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife and they shall become one flesh. That's nice. I'm glad that, you know, you want to share a quote from your fantasy book, but there's supposed to be a separation of church and state. So your religion doesn't get to dictate the laws in that state or this country or dictate the lives of other Americans. You want to abide by what the Bible says? Cool. You have all the right in the world to do that, but you don't get to force your religion on everyone else, especially in a country that is supposed to have a constitution that calls for a separation of church and state. They say that they're constitutionalists. They say that they want to protect the Constitution. You don't want to protect the Constitution. You want to cherry pick and use the Constitution when it's convenient for you and your own BS. You never want to use the Constitution when it actually applies to laws that you're proposing.
Can somebody email Genesis to my ex-husband? Because we did not become flesh. I just wanted to burn his.
Ooh, how creepy is that? Like, God, I read that. I was like, that must be like Genesis when Peter Gabriel was with the band Genesis. Yeah. Like, it's really, like, really symbolic. But no, that's Genesis, the book of the Bible. It's so, like, become one flesh. Like, you still, I just had to take a shower after that.
I came from your rib. I don't know if you know that.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yep. I came from your rib.
I came from a real big guy, though. He had a big, big rib, apparently.
I love it. It's just so gross. And it's like, listen, the reason your governor is the governor of your state now, the one who's going to veto this if it even gets any traction to become a law.
Governor
like,
Roy Cooper? I don't
the
know.
The reason he's the governor is because of crap like this.
That's
it's because of the backlash to, you know, the HB2 that changed the laws about the bathrooms. And so just get the message. I get it, though. This is the kind of thing that you do when you have been elected in a district where you need to pander to this kind of stuff to make people feel like you're still fighting for their rights and you need to be super strong evangelical. But it's this kind of stuff that is the wrong answer. Like litigated, taken care of. Supreme Court said, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, by the way, Republicans in the state, to give them credit, fought back against this and they're like, this is a bad idea, right? So it's three lawmakers, obviously very conservative lawmakers. And you're right, this isn't something that they're doing because they genuinely think it will work. They're not really trying to pass legislation. What they're doing is pandering, yeah, right? And here's the thing, you are supposed to be a leader, okay? So yes, you have to represent your constituents when it makes sense, but you also have to be a leader and basically lead your constituents in the right direction.
Right.
So if your constituents want you to, like, I don't know, bomb Florida, are you gonna be like, well, my constituents want me to bomb Florida, so I gotta go ahead and draft it? No, you have to be a leader and realize when your constituents aren't doing something that's in the best interest of the state.
Yeah,
and that they're unwilling to do that, they'd rather pander.
And to make the assumption that all of the people of North Carolina feel this way, you are pandering to a specific group.
Mm-hmm.
Just on a more heart level, like this constant mentality that gay people are not human beings, that they are just, they continue to be an agenda item on people's, an agenda item, like, God damn, leave the gay people alone.
Yeah.
Like, what, they want to get
married. Live your life.
Yeah, it's just gotten to the point where it's, I was raised by a gay man. I turned out okay. So I think it's just becoming to the point, I feel like it's the last hoorah. Like,
yeah,
they're fighting, they're hanging on. They're like, oh man, civilization has moved on,
yeah,
and they're not buying this bullshit anymore. Even people who are religious are like, I think gay, that's their business.
Look, it's the right wing in the country and the stereotypes that they believe about same-sex couples. It's just, it's dangerous, but also to some extent hilarious, right? Because
we all know
gay couples. My sister-in-law's gay, and I'm actually kind of jealous of their relationship because,
yeah,
it's like, it's just such an incredible relationship. They have an insanely beautiful family, perfect household. I mean, every family has problems, but that they have a little girl, and that little girl is surrounded by so much love. And to think that these types of lawmakers would want to break them up, or maybe not even give them the ability to have kids, yeah, or raise kids, or foster kids, or adopt kids, it's disgusting. Live your own life, okay?
Right.
Stop bothering them.
It's like, I get it. You don't believe in gay marriage. You don't think that's a good marriage. You don't want to live your life in a gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get gay married.
Yeah, don't get married again.
I think you, yeah, should write a law where you, and I'd sign it, where the people who don't want to get gay married don't have to get gay married.
Yeah, it seems like they don't know that, right?
Or some of them may secretly feel a little gay in their hearts.
Right.
And that is why they push back and they fight so heavily against gay people.
It's kind of like overcompensating.
Yeah.
And maybe they're worried that, you know, you normalize it and then I'll be too tempted.
But they talk about normalizing the way, you mean like the way they've been trying to normalize hate against, you know, minority groups. And
that's right.
But you know what I mean? Like, like you said, just leave them alone.
Yeah.
God damn.
Just live your life. Do you, boo.
Yes.
Okay. All right, guys, we have very little time left, so I want to give you an opportunity to plug your work. Brett Ehrlich.
Oh, God. Okay, so earlier in the show today, we talked about how two videos teaching a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I did a video a long time ago. I won a Webby for it. It was
nice.
Viral Video Film School, youtube.com/viralvideos. That's how long I've been doing that. It's called Internet's Best Dumbest How-To Videos.
Nice.
And the reason that you can learn how to drive a car, something that basic, on YouTube is because there's a lot of services that exist that pay per video. So it'll be like how to send a fax to Mexico, a different video for how to send a fax to Venezuela, a different video for all that. So
that's
check
amazing.
It out.
I didn't even know you
fun.
Did that.
They teach you how to wash two utensils at one time.
I'm gonna watch it when I'm in the car.
I do that all the time.
I like to drive and watch videos. I will be at the Stand in New York City tomorrow night at 9, at 8 and 10, and Saturday at 8 and 10. And on Tuesday, April 18th, on my grandmother's birthday, I dropped my first comedy album, I'll Say It For You. You can pick it up on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon. But it's a very special project for me because I go in, I go hard. So.
All right, making moves. I love that. All right, guys, thank you for watching. There will be a post-game show for our members. So if you are a member, please stick around, and we're going to have a lot of fun. If you're not, though, you can join by supporting our show and catching the post-game show and archives of the main show anytime you want. YouTube.com, nope, not YouTube.com, TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, guys, thanks for watching. We will see you soon.